Steve and Jill here.
Howdy.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, Entertaining Land Investment Talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about how direct mail campaign efficiency is not a goal.
But I would think that is.
You send out
I'm kidding, 1,000 mailers.
You buy a property. You make 10,000 bucks. Your mailer cost is $500. You do everything wrong. You send out 3,000 mailers instead because you made some mistakes. Costs $1,500 now to make $10,000. That's the whole show.
And you will explain more, I am sure.
Before we get into it, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the landinvestors.com online community. It's free.
I imagine people are scratching their heads right now. I'm thinking, I thought more was better. I'm so confused.
No, so you know what it is? And this begs the bit, there's always a bigger, what's really underneath the whole thing.
Right.
Number one, people don't like to outlay money to make money. That's just human nature. Unless you're on Wall Street, then you love doing it. And number two, there's this, I don't understand what it is about. There's this whole culture, and Jill and I have been talking about this for years on this show, this culture of negotiation and getting stuff cheap.
Right. I understand. Thank you. All right. So Greg wrote in our online community, "Hi, fellas. I've got a slick deal out east on 10 acres, but I was checking the deed, and it's in an HOA. I searched and searched, but it sounds like the subdivision was divided 15 years ago, but few of the lots were sold, and the HOA never started collecting fees. They were $300 annually in the HOA declaration. Most of the lots seem to be owned by a bank and are not for sale. I want to call the HOA and ask if the fees are active, what the future looks like for access, etc. There's a private road leading to the property, but I can't find any contact information for the association if there is one. My concerns are, number one, are there back fees that the seller hasn't paid? I can't seem to verify. Two, can they put up a gate across the private road and further restrict access either now or in the future?
Yes.
Three, hold me hostage for other fees, etc.
Yes.
Should I be concerned? Is this just a good old junk property now, the kind I like? And how can I find out more about the HOA? Thanks." And then we have a little follow-up here.
Yeah, so a lot of people answered in Land Investors, and then he finally said this.
This is the result of his digging. Mm-hmm. All right, so then he said, "I called the county, and they indicated the HOA is still valid on record, but the subdivision went bankrupt. I called the bank, and they told me that the rest of the properties in the subdivision are under contract to buy. Looks like someone beat me to this pile of properties, but I might still buy one from the private party after I discuss with the current owner about the HOA fees. The question is, what is the new owner of the rest of the subdivision going to do with parcels? Sell them cheap or make something more valuable out of them?" This is a really good question.
That's like, what I thought too.
For me, I have to take a step back and think about, what is his name, Greg, okay. Greg, I got to take a step back. I'm wondering, do I want to get involved in this mess? Potential mess. And I love that you're thinking about, if this guy bought them all up, yeah, and he sells them really cheap, great. That's going to make the value of mine go down when I post it for sale. Or he could be a buyer, though, too. If he's buying them all for a particular reason, he will want yours. So there could be an opportunity and a play there. What do you think?
It's, you know, what's left out of this, and I'm not criticizing it at all. This is a fantastic question, and it's a pleasure to answer these questions. How much money is to be made? So if we're talking about buying a piece of property that for, let's say, a few thousand dollars, and it's got, you know, it's going to be 50 grand by the time it's over, it's worth digging into. In general, Jill, for years, and Jill and I have said for years, HOA property's tough for a bunch of reasons. It really throws a wrench into a lot of things. My gut on this, just from the information that Jill just described, is that the HOA is probably long gone. People get salaries and stuff, so they're probably long gone. Are there accumulated fees? I'm sure there are. They didn't file the paperwork to end it with the county. I'm surprised that's all the county said. Usually the county will have a real strong opinion about what, hey, oh my God, that, oh, you don't even think about buying property out there. Janice 2 years ago bought a piece of property and it got flooded, that kind of thing. So, you know, for us, I wouldn't do this.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you there, because, you know, here's my thing. For all the questions that you as a professional investor have right now, Greg, imagine the questions you're going to answer from every single person looking to buy that property. Mm-hmm. You're going to be forever telling the story and forever trying to make them feel good and forever telling them that I really think nothing's going to happen, because that's the reality. I think it's going to be okay. I don't think this HOA can come back to life, but there's that 1% that we don't know. And for those reasons, I'm out.
Okay, Shark Tank.
Yeah, that's right.
I think here's what's interesting about this, really the reason I included it in the show. There's a bank. So the bank saw some value in this at some point and lended against it. And now, you know, they foreclosed on it, which is expensive as hell and time consuming. And they're reselling it to somebody. So somewhere there's this REO property, real estate owned property by the bank, who saw some serious value in it. So that makes me think, all right, wait a minute. I'm not going to give up too soon here.
And so then it comes down to how cheap is it?
Yeah.
You know what I would do too? How cheap is it? This could be the deciding thing for me. If I'm getting it for a couple $1,000s, and then worst case scenario, I don't remember what he said, the HOA fees were $300 a year, I think it was.
Yeah.
So how many years of $300 times 15 years, what could they come at me with? I'd have to add up worst case scenario, yeah, and then I make a decision.
No one's collecting. No one's, it's bankrupt.
I know.
The subdivision went bankrupt. I don't know if they filed bankruptcy.
I want to see it in writing.
You know what? Jill brings up a great point. I'm sure nobody's paid anything on this since ever, including all the other property owners. So all it takes is one attorney who's bored one day to look into this and say, I'm going to send everybody a bill.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring this HOA back to life.
There's real specific laws.
Could you imagine?
State laws about homeowners associations, and if you get just a couple months behind, they can start filing lawsuits. I know this from personal experience in Arizona, owning condos, flipping condos. This has happened to us. So, and it's, the rules are outrageously against the homeowner.
This could be somebody's business. You're not
wrong. It is somebody's business.
Well, like some attorney could say, wait a minute, you got at least 10 years of how many properties? Let's just say there's 100 properties. Times $300 a year, that's a lot of money. If I was an attorney, I might go, you know, I might take this on. Because the money I collect will now bring this HOA back to life.
Here's a Frankenstein of a story about HOAs. One of our best friends is an attorney in Scottsdale, has a huge practice, and it's all mostly real estate. And he said, every time somebody builds any type, this is brand new, any type of condo complex, or even a lot of new master plan subdivisions now even have HOAs. They're $25 a year, but they take care of landscaping and things like that. When it gets released, the project's done and it's open to the public, there's a class action lawsuit filed. Every single one, without exception, in Arizona. Do they get any traction on it? Of course, they settle on it. But so it is a lot of people's business model. So I'm not here to say, oh my God, never buy HOA property. That's probably not gonna happen here. I'm just saying HOAs suck. That's what I'm saying. They're stupid.
Tell us how you really feel, please.
Well, you know.
I'm teasing.
Just picture the person.
I know.
You know, we're all like investors here. I want you to picture in your head what the person looks like who's sitting in a new house that they bought in Arizona on their travertine tile and their quartz countertop, drinking a cup of tea and just wallowing and reveling. And the fact that no one can have a camper in the community, and the grass has to be 1.5 inches, between 1.5 inches and 2 inches. You can't park in the street overnight. And she just loves that. She just wants to hug herself because she's part of that. That's an HOA. She's probably a real estate agent.
Sounds like
agent
a
too,
former
actually.
Girlfriend or something. A lot about this.
I've had to personally settle lawsuits. They're never with land. But Jill and I, for a period, bought defunct condominiums from banks for really cheap, ended up keeping one forever. And so there is always a battle with an HOA.
You know, it's funny. I just bought an HOA property right now. I'm not kidding.
That's great.
And
Jill,
the reason that I bought it, I want to give a little bit of truth time. It's not all bad, but I'm testing this area. There's like several I could buy. I'm buying one to see because it really is dreamy. And it's lake with boat rides. And like they have a shared boat dock and a slip. You know, like each house gets a slip. I'm not kidding. I'm dead serious. And it's not expensive. They don't have a pool. That's like the thing. There's like a basically at the end of this drive at the main point on the lake, they have a shared building, like a community center or something. No pool, no tennis courts, something like that. It's all about the boating. So that, you know what? I'm going to test this. It's not expensive. And I bought it so darn cheap. We can afford to do this.
You know, I love boating.
I happen to know. Really?
So I'm going to ask you that. Don't ever do this at home. This is just between me and Jill now. Was it something you'd like to keep?
Potentially. You know, it's a really pretty area. I did it because it's newer. The homes are gorgeous. It's a definite pride of ownership situation. You know, I didn't think about this actually when I bought it. Next time I'll see how it goes. Let's see how if we like it, how fast it sells, and maybe I'll bring one to you.
Okay. Is there more than one?
I have the opportunity to buy several.
Oh, Jill.
I said, let's hold off. Let's test one in this area because I don't know it. It's so backwards, too. I had to literally ask and dig to find the CCNRs. No one provided them. We bought it through escrow, too, and no one ever thought about them. Wow. Like, can we get our hands on this stuff,
by That's the a way? Good sign. It's you hilarious. Can't find somebody to hand you the CCNRs, no. And they're not online. Yeah. They don't care.
I had to dig to get them.
That's good.
No, I did. And my team said, you can do pretty much anything you want out here. I'm like, this is great. Okay. Done.
Today's topic, direct mail campaign efficiency is not a goal. This is why you're listening. What does he mean to efficiency? This happens multiple times on consulting calls that we have, Jill and I, and just in our environment. There's this desire, for some reason, to not trust how we teach this, which is, look, you're gonna send out X amount of mail, X amount of offers, intelligently send them out, and you can expect within reason and range that between Y and Z number of offers are going to generate a deal where you can make a ton of dough at 20 to 25% of retail. And so the vast majority of our members, they go with that and they're happy and they email us 10 deals later and say, you guys are the best. There's always people who for some reason, actually I know the reasons, want to make that more efficient. And so yesterday we interviewed Tiffany Carter. If you haven't listened to it, you really should. And so she started in this business long before she ever knew about Land Academy or even investing in land by driving around in the car and picking out 10 houses in a subdivision or 40 houses, she said, I guess. And there was always invariably like an infill lot, a vacant piece of property, and sending mail. She would write them all down and get the addresses and then go home and make a tiny little mail campaign and send out letters of interest, I think she said, or maybe even offers. But she was always intrigued by the land part of it. You know, there's always one or two pieces of land. And so she horsed around. What she was doing inadvertently, I'm not criticizing Tiffany. I think it was one of the best interviews we've ever done.
I agree.
And I have nothing but respect for her. But, and we all can, including me and Jill, can learn from that interview. And what I learned was that mailer efficiency is something that seems like a natural, normal thing. Like saving money is a natural, normal thing for most people. This is not the time to do that. Now's the time to get more mail out. In fact, the week before, we interviewed Tom and
Patricia,
and the title of the show is "I Would Wish I Would Have Sent Out More Mail." Right. So, mailer efficiency. While you might be new at this, and you might be saying, you know, I don't want to send out 1,000 letters and buy one property. I want to send out 300. I'm here to tell you, that's bad.
That's right. More mail is always better. Mm-hmm. That's what we always say. And it's so funny. People laugh at us. We're like, come on, really? I'm like, no, that's really what we talk about. Like, we have this separate advanced group that we communicate in WhatsApp, and we have a call with them today. And we get together, and then it's the same thing. You know, they're blasting by the we're not just doing by the thousands. The tens of thousands. Is who it is. And that's, you know, what's interesting is if you want to be in the advanced group, that's one of the things that we look at. We know you are in this, you are serious about investing like us, because you send out a ton of mail.
That's it.
Which is what we do.
That's what we do.
A ton. Because I always say, too, it's just so much easier. This is how I look at it. And I was on a, I got to be a guest on some Land Academy members' accountability group recently. And I told them the best thing they could do is cut themselves off. Don't spend, you know, days and weeks analyzing and picking a county and pricing. Give yourself a cutoff and get it out there. And I told them to just do a lot. And if you don't have a lot of time, get a lot of data, scrub down so you have maybe 2,000 or 3,000 going out on a week consistently, because that's the best thing ever. Because what does that do? It gives you every day new opportunities popping into your email, coming on your phone, popping into your mailbox of properties to look at. And you have consistent stuff to look through. And you're like, you might go to bed sleeping about one. This is truly what I do. I'm like, you know, I'm on the fence. I write myself notes in my team, and I'll put in there, Jill to decide on Friday. Because I'm like, oh, I got to sleep on this one a little bit. And usually by the time Friday rolls around, I'm either doing it or I'm not doing it, or there's something better that popped in is usually what happened. And I'm like, you know what? Glad I didn't waste my time on this one. I was obviously not feeling it. I didn't jump into it right away. And look, I got three more that are better than this one. Done.
We have certain people in our group that only want to do one or two deals a month, but they want to make sure they're really good deals. In one case, this guy only does deals where he can make $100,000. So he tries to make $1 million net a year. So do you think that if he looks at, sends out a bunch of mail, sends out 4,000 or 5,000 pieces of mail and gets three acquisition candidates back, that's good? Or is this better? Sending out 50,000 offers and looking at 80 or 90 or 100 potential transactions and then choosing from that group. No matter how you slice this, it's always better to send out more mail. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying blanket the entire country with that, because that's just silly. And I think you could never handle the calls. You still have to be smart about it. And I'll tell you, if it's not priced right, then you're just wasting time and money anyway. But I'm saying intelligently send out a bunch of mail so that you have enough deals to choose from where you ensure your success.
Exactly. Happy you could join us today. 5 days a week, you can find us right here on the Land Academy Show.
Tomorrow, the episode on the Land Academy Show is called Filling in the Land Acquisition Education Gaps with Land Academy. You are not alone in your real estate ambition. It's Tiffany Carter week.
It is. It's kind of funny.
And she said, I learned about buying and selling land all over the internet, and then I learned about you guys, and you filled in the gaps. Yep. So that's exactly. What we'll talk, what gaps those are exactly tomorrow.
Yep. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you find our content valuable, and we absolutely appreciate your support. If you haven't already, please zip on over to our YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button.
And your comments and suggestions help us to create the type of content you're here for. Hitting the like button helps to support our channel's algorithm and gauge your interest for future shows.
We are Steve and Jill.
Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.